There was no love at first sight, no stomach fluttering feeling of, this is the one, just the realization that this was the best my budget could get me. My realtor, already frustrated with how many times I'd said no to other places, watched anxiously over my shoulder as I signed the papers, as if she was afraid I'd back out at the last minute. And then, just like that, I was the less-than-proud owner of a decades-old house and all of its problems. Still, I told myself as I was handed the keys, it was better than continuing to live with my all-too-recent ex-husband. It took a few coats of paint, some new flooring, and a lot of personal touches, but after a while, my new home started to grow on me, despite the never-ending list of things that needed to be fixed. The projects kept me occupied, which allowed the raw wound of my divorce to slowly scab over, and without me really realizing it, I was moving forward. It wasn't until I'd been there for about a month that I started to notice the crow. I was sitting at my kitchen table, staring aimlessly out the window over a cup of coffee, when I saw a small crow perched on the back porch railing. It was hopping up and down the length of it, its beady eyes fixed on the door. Amused, I watched it for a while before continuing on with my day. The next morning, around the same time, the bird was back, and again the following day. Every day that week, I'd look out, and there it was, hopping along the railing, looking expectantly at the door. Finally, when my curiosity got the best of me, I wrapped myself in my robe, grabbed the neglected heel of my loaf of bread, and stepped out to greet it. I stood still beside the door while it regarded me warily, its little head turning this way and that. It moved away from the far end of the railing, where it fluffed up, smoothed itself, and fluffed again. I laughed softly and tore a small piece off of the heel, which I tossed toward it. Go on, I said encouragingly, and the crow clicked its beak in indecision. It's the good stuff, not even store brand. After a few moments of nervous rustling, it took off and flew quickly towards the woods that bordered my backyard. I sighed, rolled my eyes, and went back in, figuring I'd not see my little feathered visitor anymore. Even with such doubt, I replaced the heel in the bread bag instead of throwing it out. But the next day, it was back, once again bouncing along the railing. This time, I just opened the door wide enough to toss the heel out while I stayed inside and watched from the window. The crow looked from the bread to the door and back a few times before it decided the risk was worth it and dove down to enjoy its breakfast treat. Feeding the crow became part of my morning routine. When it became clear it wasn't just going to be a one-time event, I did some research and bought some actual birdseed and treats for it to enjoy. Over time, I was able to go from tossing things out the door, to standing on one far side of the porch while it ate on the other, to leaning on the rail right next to it while it pecked away to its heart's content. You need a name, huh? I said to it one morning. It continued eating without pause, and I smiled. What about Poe? Nice and cliche, huh? Granted, that was a raven, but I won't let that bother me if you don't. So named, I lifted my coffee mug towards Poe and took a sip, and for the first time in a long time, I was content. Poe, as it turned out, was a generous little companion, and a few months after I'd started feeding him, he began to return the favor. He'd fly up to the porch, drop his gift beside me, wait for me to pick it up, and then begin eating when he was satisfied that I'd accepted his offering. At first, it was just twigs or small rocks, typical things he'd find on the ground. Then, one day, he brought me a button. It was dirty, but obviously white, save for a rusty red spot, and had bits of thread and cloth still hanging from it. "Don't tell me you attacked someone to get this," I said, teasingly. I added the button to my collection of Poe's gifts and forgot about it. Eventually, Poe started to bring friends to my porch, and it wasn't unusual for me to have half a dozen crows lined up, waiting for breakfast. It got to the point that I almost didn't need an alarm anymore. The cawing of hungry crows was more than enough to wake me. "People are going to start thinking I'm a crazy bird lady because of you guys," I told them while I spread a line of bird seed along the railing. They scrambled to be the first to get it. "If you were robins or sparrows, I might be a magical princess, but a murder of crows? I'm the witch in the woods." That day, Poe left me a little plastic bead, the kind that kids use on friendship bracelets. On both sides, although chipped and faded, the letter K was still visible. Later in the afternoon, while I was sitting in my office working on a client's website, my doorbell rang. "Hello," an elderly man greeted me cheerfully when I answered the door. He held up a plate of cookies. "I'm Stan. I live across the road." "Hi," I said with a polite smile. "Beth."
"Sorry it's taken me so long to welcome you to the neighborhood. I've been visiting my children. They're all scattered about, and it takes a few months to make the rounds."
"Oh, well, thank you. I appreciate it. I'm sorry. I'm in the middle of work."
Of course, here. These are for you. Homemade, you know, my wife's recipe. They're not as good as when she used to make them, I'm sure. But I hope they're still edible."
I accepted the cookies with another smile. "I'm sure they're going to be great. Thanks again. That's really nice."
"If you ever need anything, I'm right across the way in the brown house. You just stop by whenever, all right? I'm usually there."
"Okay, I will." I took a step back in order to close the door.
"How are you finding the place?"
he asked, either oblivious to or outright ignoring my obvious desire to get back to work. And I sighed inwardly. "It's great. Nice and quiet. Just the way I like it." Hint, hint.
"Lovely! It's been a while since we've had anyone living here. Is it just you?"
"Just me and the crows."
"The crows?"
He furrowed his brow and then nodded in understanding.
"Oh, the crows! Isn't that funny? They must still remember."
Despite myself, I asked, "Remember?"
"Yeah, the little girl who lived here before you used to feed them. It was the cutest thing. They started bringing her things, and it just made her so happy."
He looked over my shoulder into the house, his expression tinged by a wistful sadness.
"They kept coming even after she disappeared. Guess you being here brought them back."
"Oh.
She was a sweet kid. Just about destroyed her parents when she..."
Stan trailed off and shook his head.
"Well, I'm just glad someone's living here again."
After Stan had gone and I was back on my computer, I found myself unable to concentrate on my work. I was distracted by what he told me about the little girl and the crows. I pulled up a browser and typed in my town name and the name of the couple I'd bought the house from. "Fifth grader kidnapped from her yard. Parents of missing girl plead for answers. Police call off active search after no new leads." I skimmed the articles quickly. 10-year-old Caitlin Graham had vanished while playing in her backyard. Her parents, who had been inside, hadn't seen or heard anything, only discovered she was gone when she didn't come in for dinner. The search was extensive, but hindered by heavy ice and snowstorms, and after months with no new leads or information, police were forced to stop. The case remained open, but inactive. A site maintained by her family begged for anyone with any knowledge to come forward. On the About Caitlin page, they described her as a bright, energetic, and an animal lover who wanted to be a vet when she grew up. One of the pictures they'd posted shows a girl with short hair and glasses smiling brightly at the camera. She was standing on what I recognized to be the back porch, and beside her, perched on the railing, were a pair of crows. I closed the browser and sat back with a heavy sigh. That explained why Poe had started showing up. He had probably been looking for the girl, Caitlin. Caitlin. Kay. I frowned and reached into my pocket where I had absently shoved Poe's gift from this morning. My fingers closed around the bead and I pulled it out. It lay flat in my palm, the letter K, staring up at me. When the crows showed up the next morning, I fed them as usual and took my seat to wait. Poe didn't bring me anything that day, nor the next. I was getting frustrated with him, which I realized was silly, but I kept hoping that whatever he brought next, it would be definitive proof that the bead and maybe even the button he'd given me were Caitlin's. The next gift was a grimy nickel, and the one after that, another bead, this one bright red. Nothing that tied Poe to the girl. I was starting to feel silly, like maybe I'd spent too much time by myself and was letting the tragedy that had occurred in my house get under my skin. What were the odds that Poe had even known the girl? And it all happened over a year ago. And then, on one particularly chilly morning, he laid a small, white bone on the railing in front of me. I swallowed a gag and crouched in front of it, wanting to get a better look, but unwilling to touch it. To my untrained eye, it looked to be a finger bone. The size seemed right for a child. "Where did you get this?" I whispered. Poe ignored me in favor of his seed. A smarter person would have just called the cops then and there, or at least gotten dressed in warmer clothes. Instead, I ran inside, grabbed my phone, tugged my coat on over my pajamas, shoved my feet into my boots, and darted back out, hoping the crows were still there. It was just my luck that they were in no rush. When Poe took off in the direction of the woods, I hurried after him on foot, one hand raised to shield my eyes against the winter sun. It was difficult to keep up with him from the ground. I tripped more than I ran and was forever snagging myself on low-hanging branches and underbrush. I thought for sure I'd lose sight of Poe with all my stumbling, but every time I looked up, he was still overhead. I felt almost as though he was waiting for me. Deeper and deeper into the woods, on and on until my feet ached and cold had seeped through my thin pajama bottoms. I hugged myself and stamped my feet, trying to return some of the warmth to my fast chilling limbs, but I kept going. I heard the murder of crows before I saw them, a chorus of harsh calls from the treetops. It sounded like there must have been hundreds all around me, crowding the branches. Poe came to settle on a bare branch of a tall tree and turned to look at me, his head cocked to one side. Around us, the other crows gradually quieted until there was only the whistling of the wind. Poe cawed once. I took a step forward towards his tree, and he cawed again. I felt almost like we were playing a game of warmer, colder, and let out a short, nervous laugh. The tree's base was knotted and gnarled, its roots a dangerously tangled mess. I stepped through them as carefully as I could, but still managed to lose my footing more than once. Poe paced along the length of the branch, his feathers ruffled anxiously. The other crows were similarly unsettled, but all remained silent. I rounded the tree's wide trunk, my heart beating so fast and hard I was half afraid I might be having a heart attack. Overhead, Poe let out a soft squawk. I narrowed my eyes and scanned the ground carefully. At some point in the tree's long history, some animal had dug its way down through the ground and root to make a den at its foot. I would have missed it entirely beneath the forest debris, except for the flash of white that showed itself when I disturbed the leaves as my foot brushed over them. I screeched and fell backwards. A four-fingered skeletal hand was reaching up out of the hole. Around its wrist, the remnants of a beaded bracelet had caught on the cuff of its pink jacket. As I scrambled to find my phone, the crows began to caw and fly off until only Poe remained. He didn't leave until the police and ambulance arrived and Caitlin's body was carefully removed from the base of the tree. As an officer was questioning me, I watched Poe hop to the end of his branch, ruffle himself a final time, and take off after the other crows. Caitlin Graham had been raped, beaten, strangled, and finally killed by a blow that almost crushed half her skull. I turned over the button, beads, and bone that Poe had brought to me, and offered what little help that I could. The red spot on the button, which hadn't come off of any of Caitlin's clothing, tested positive as blood and hair fibers were found in the torn cloth. Skin and hair was also retrieved from under the girl's fingernails. When it was revealed that the police were confident they were about to finally catch her killer, Stan, my cookie-baking neighbor, committed suicide. His note only said, "May God forgive me." The crows only showed up one more time after Caitlin was found. It was the night they came to retrieve Stan's body. The birds were on every power line, the roof of his house, crowded in his trees. When the stretcher containing Stan, already zipped in a black bag, was wheeled out, they screeched long and loud, only stopping once he was out of sight. Once he was gone, they rose like a dark cloud and departed.